From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Two and a half weeks before the deadline for enrolling in health insurance, we look at changes affecting what Marylanders will pay. Laura Wilson, executive director of the Maryland Rural Health Association, describes challenges and resources for the one-fourth of Marylanders who live in rural counties. And Andrew Ratner, chief of staff at the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange, explains how the state's reinsurance program has led to lower premiums.
The people who had qualified for financial help had generally been cushioned from the rate increases because those tax credits went up if the rate increases went up. It's for the people whose household incomes didn't qualify them for the financial support who will benefit the most.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. We're just a few weeks away from the December 15th federal deadline to enroll in a health insurance plan or make changes to an existing one. Marylanders can access plans through the Maryland Health Connection, the online insurance marketplace that serves tens of thousands of customers. There have been some changes to the insurance plans, especially in costs for consumers. Here to tell us more about it is Andrew Ratner, chief of staff at the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange, a state agency that helps Marylanders access affordable health coverage. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila.
The big news, I think, is that the price of some insurance plans has dropped, not nationwide, but in Maryland due to a state reinsurance program. Tell us about that and how it works.
Yeah, I think that'll be very eye-opening for a lot of people that for the first time in decades, the premiums, the monthly payment that you make has come down on a lot of plans, most plans for the 2019 plan year.
And why is that?
A reinsurance program, as you mentioned, that was approved by the governor and the legislature and then the federal government will cover some of the costs that the insurance companies have for the riskiest sort of the situations that they cover. That enabled the prices for everyone to be able to come down.
And are the premiums lower only for people who qualify based on need or for anyone who buys insurance?
Good question. It actually is a benefit even more so for the people who haven't qualified in the past for financial assistance. The people who had qualified for financial help, tax credits under Obamacare, had generally been cushioned from the rate increases because those tax credits went up if the rate increases went up. It's for the people who whose household incomes didn't qualify them for the financial support who will benefit the most. So there's about 80% of the people who buy coverage on the health exchange get some financial help, 20% don't, and then there's another group of people who buy health insurance directly from the companies off the exchange, and those people are the ones who will probably benefit the most from this reinsurance program.
Does the decrease in premiums take the place of subsidies that some people have been eligible for?
The subsidies will continue, and the subsidy part of it will still, those people are generally protected, and there are people that while the rates change and the prices change depending on where you are in the state, I think last year the prices for some plans in places like Western Maryland where there was just the one provider, CareFirst, we said for the price of a movie ticket you could get coverage. This year it might be the price of a movie ticket and dinner, but still extremely affordable.
Is the reinsurance program only a temporary fix?
Yes, it is. There's enough money probably to last for 2 or 3 years. But the hope is that it will bring more people into the individual market, bring younger, healthier people into the individual market, perhaps coax more competition into the market, and stabilize it.
We've been talking about premiums. What about deductibles in the insurance plans? The Baltimore Sun reported, quote, the average medical deductible per plan will rise nearly $300, close quote. First, remind us what a deductible is.
A deductible is the out-of-pocket that you, beside the monthly payment, the out-of-pocket that someone may have to pay based on the plan they have for their medical bills. So the deductibles in some cases have risen, and that is a concern going forward and something that needs to be looked at and addressed. But there are some things, some advice to give people this time around when they're looking for a plan. And one is there are different metal levels of plans.
Metal levels
like bronze, silver, gold, which would mean that you might pay out a little bit more per month in order to get a lesser deductible out of pocket that you'd have to pay if you had a lot of medical bills. And based on some of the changes that have been made for this next year, it may be worth your while, if you had gotten a silver plan before, to look at the price of a gold plan, which may have come down disproportionately, and maybe for a few more dollars a month, you could drop your deductible amount by hundreds or even more than $1,000.
Why is the health insurance market susceptible to fluctuations in premium costs to begin with?
Well, I think the individual market has some more risk into it than the other types of markets. I think when the president said that health insurance is complex, he was definitely right about that. And I think for a lot of people, if they understood the way the market works, it's different than other types of markets. Your car insurance isn't based on where you work, but your health insurance is based, in a sense, on where you work, whether you work for a large organization or a small business or as an individual. Or might work for a business that doesn't provide insurance, you are grouped in a different so-called risk pool, and that can affect how much you pay out for insurance. Your car insurance does not work that way. Your house insurance does not work that way, and that makes it different.
That's Andrew Ratner, Chief of Staff at the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange. Here on The Record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. The deadline to sign up for insurance on the exchange is in less than 3 weeks, December 15th, so we're looking at changes in Maryland health insurance premiums and other costs. The Maryland Health Connection is the marketplace where consumers and small businesses can shop and buy insurance. People access the Maryland Health Connection online, but you also have live events coming up. Tell us
about
those.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, we have a series of 18, what we call last chance events, December 4th through December 9th, and they're listed on the website, the marylandhealthconnection.gov/last chance. There's one here in the city on December 8th from 9 to 2 at Healthcare Access Maryland on 1 North Charles Street. There's also a toll-free number that people can call to get help through our call center, and that is 1-855-642-8572.
855-642-8572. We will post that number on our website as well as information about these events. But what happens, and if you want to enroll at one of these events, what do you need to bring with you?
Good question. It's a good idea to bring information about income, such as pay stubs or W-2 forms, to calculate financial assistance you might be eligible for, a photo ID, Social Security numbers, and birth dates for your family members who enroll, and if there's any information about any job-related health insurance that any of the family members already might have available to them.
So if you bring all that, you can actually sign up right there at one of these events.
Right there,
you can make
a choice.
Tell us about buying health insurance by phone.
You can call our call center. We have experts available, and they can walk you through purchasing it on the phone.
And you also have an app, a phone app?
Yes, thank you very much. I think it's the best phone app in the country. It's been used, it's been downloaded more than 250,000 times. It's used to do an enrollment on someone's mobile device, on their phone, 50,000 times, and someone can use the app to enroll end-to-end. Or if they just want in-person assistance, go on the app. There's a GPS locator. Plug in the address you're at, and it'll find you the closest help, be it an authorized navigator or an insurance broker authorized to sell on the individual market. And it's quite popular, and particularly with young adults.
Are Marylanders required to have health insurance?
There is no requirement for Marylanders to have health insurance.
The federal requirement dropped, and Maryland doesn't have one of its own, although that's being discussed. So do you expect the number, without a mandate, do you expect the number of people buying insurance to drop?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, we had predicted because of the reinsurance program the number of people to increase by about 6%. But the zeroing out of that mandate is having an effect elsewhere in the country, and those are in the early days. So far, after several weeks, we're tracking a little ahead of last year. Our renewals are up, and our new enrollments are about keeping pace with a year ago. We still have most of the enrollments often come in the last few weeks, so it still remains to be seen what the impact of that zeroing out of that mandate might have.
When the health insurance marketplace began 5 years ago, there was a good deal of confusion about the enrollment process. How is the Maryland Health Exchange addressing that?
Yeah, thank you. We have improved the technology. I think we realized that, we stumbled out of the gate on technology at first, but I think the technology has improved greatly. The operations have improved greatly. We've added things like a chat bot with artificial intelligence to answers people's questions, questions about household incomes and how do I calculate my household income, which often trips people up, is something that, you know, if they go online, they can get some answers about right away. So I think operationally, the call center times have been cut back dramatically from where they used to be. We have used user experience testing where we have watched consumers who've allowed us as they enroll and, you know, on a webcam to find out where they get tripped up and redesign the website several times and the application several times and are continuing to do that right now again. So I think we have made a lot of strides in trying to make it easier to enroll.
The deadline is December 15th. Even if you want to make a change in insurance you already have, should people review their health insurance plans every year?
Absolutely, in part because of the changes with the reinsurance program. But overall, I think it's just a good idea to review, to make sure you're getting the right insurance. Care First had recently looked at people and had a lot of people who were buying a gold, buying a plan higher than the levels at which they use the insurance, and was trying to send out messages to these folks to say, you know, if you're only going to use it at a certain level, maybe you should only pay for that certain level to make sure that you're using and paying for the coverage that you think you might have. Now, one thing about insurance is no one has a crystal ball, so you never do quite know what's going to happen in the coming year to you or your family. But to try to sort of, it's definitely a good idea to look over your plan, also to make sure that you make any changes in expected income for the coming year, which could affect any financial help, like a tax credit that you could receive.
Thanks for walking us through it.
I appreciate it.
Andrew Ratner is Chief of Staff at the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange, a state agency that runs the online marketplace where consumers and small businesses can shop for affordable health insurance. We've been talking about changes, decreases in health insurance premiums for Marylanders, and some of the resources available to those who need to buy health insurance before the December 15th deadline. We'll have links at the On the Record page at WYPR.org to some of what we've discussed. This is On the Record. Short break now, and then we'll learn about access to health care in the Free State's rural areas. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about health insurance available to Marylanders and some of the changes that have occurred on that front. Earlier, we spoke with Andrew Ratner, Chief of Staff of the Maryland Health Exchange. The deadline for health insurance enrollment on the exchange is December 15th. Now we're pivoting to focus on the one-fourth of Marylanders who live in rural areas. Even when they have health insurance, access to adequate health care for rural Marylanders can be a challenge. Joining us now via phone to talk about some of those barriers and ways in which they're being removed is Laura D. Wilson, Executive Director of the Maryland Rural Health Association. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you very much for having me today.
So people hear rural and immediately think farmer, but that's not always the case, right?
That's correct. In Maryland, you know, the Eastern Shore is very heavily populated by farming community, but there are lots of different rural communities in the state. There's Western Maryland, all the way out to Garrett County and Allegheny and some of the other counties in our western region, which is a large part of our rural Maryland population. And there's also some pockets in southern Maryland, down in St. Mary's County and Calvert and Charles. And farming is populated there as well, but not always the main industry.
And 25% of the population of Maryland is rural, much more the territory, right?
Right. So there's many different definitions of rural, but for the state of Maryland, they use the definition that 18 of Maryland's 24 counties are rural. And when you look at that visually on a map, it's almost the whole state, but correct, population is only about 25%.
Except for sort of the I-95 corridor cutting through.
Yeah, right around Baltimore, PG County, Anne Arundel. Right around that Baltimore, D.C. area.
What are some of the differences or challenges in access to care for rural residents compared to those living in urban areas?
Yeah, so the Maryland Rural Health Association, we recently published the 2018 Maryland Rural Health Plan. We did this in collaboration with the State Office of Rural Health at the Maryland Department of Health, the Rural Maryland Council, and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And we went to each of the 18 state designated counties, and we did focus groups with providers and consumers to identify exactly that question. What are the unique health challenges? And some of the areas that rose to the top are specifically access to health, and that could be physical access. You know, it's too far. I can't get there. There isn't transportation, a lot of different pieces of the access. But I'll just to kind of rattle off some of these other challenges around access is a lot of programs in the rural communities have issues about sustainable funding for their programs. One of the issues is there's not a lot of care coordination. So that's something that's coming soon. How can we help patients connect and stay connected to their healthcare? Making sure that there is enough training and education around chronic disease management, health literacy and health education and health insurance literacy, and making sure that there's outreach and education to connect patients to the information that they need, making sure they know that the resources are available, and helping to make those connections.
Back up for me. What does the Maryland Rural Health Association do?
We are an education and advocacy organization. We are a membership organization, so our members include health departments, hospitals, federally qualified health centers, research organizations, state organizations, individuals, and we do two of our biggest parts of our organization is we do an annual conference. Every year we gather in a part of rural Maryland. We rotate the three rural regions of the state to talk about lessons learned and best practices. And that's a great opportunity for our members to get together and other organizations to learn from our members. We also have a legislative committee. We meet during the legislative session in Maryland, the Maryland General Assembly, and we talk about legislation that will impact or potentially impact rural Marylanders. And we make sure that the rural voice is heard in Annapolis.
Were there different concerns for adults versus young people in what you found putting the plan together?
So one of the main areas where we heard about a gap between adults and children and youth really was around behavioral health. So as we know, there is an opioid crisis in our state and the country. What goes hand in hand is some of that behavioral health treatment. And a larger gap lies in treatment for pediatrics. So whereas there might only be one psychiatrist in a particular community, there might be two communities, three communities, miles and hours away, the closest pediatric psychiatrist. So kind of that particular area is a very, very big struggle. That lends itself to some of the work that we're doing around telemedicine in our state, making sure that there is ample access to services. And if they're not available locally, how can we connect to programs in more of the urban centers? And a lot of the programs are going towards a telemedicine approach where it's video, telephone or video audio connecting, so miles away, but being able to still have that face-to-face encounter. So that's one of the areas that was talked about in the health plan. That's a lot. There's a lot of legislation around that during the legislative session that we make sure that the regulations aren't, you know, making it more challenging to provide access.
I should say, by the way, when we're talking about the plan, it's not like an insurance plan. It's a policy
Correct.
Plan.
Yes, I'm sorry. I talk about it's the Maryland Rural Health Plan. When I say plan, I'm talking about the recently published document that we worked on to address and identify what are the rural health needs in Maryland.
That's Laura D. Wilson, Executive Director of the Maryland Rural Health Association, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about barriers to health access for rural people who live in rural areas and how those are being addressed. Tell me more about how you're looking at the opioid crisis that has hit rural areas really in tougher ways than many segments of the population. What's being done?
It really gets down to that access issue. Making sure there's enough providers to meet the growing needs and making sure that individuals are connected to the services that they need. One example that I can provide, as I know that at the Garrett County Health Department, you know, patients who are receiving treatment for opioid addiction can come to the health department and there is a provider there that's able to administer their medication, but then they're receiving health services and doing their counseling with the provider in Baltimore at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. And that's a really innovative way to kind of combine the services at the county health department and to get the medicine and make sure the medication-assisted treatment is managed, if MAT is managed in the health department. But then that services, when the provider isn't able to work out of the rural communities, they can connect with the resources in Baltimore to create that developmental services all in one location for the patient to be able to really be successful.
The sort of one of the underlying themes of what you've said in the last few minutes is a shortage of
Correct.
Medical providers. I have been hearing about that, especially in terms of the Eastern Shore, but also other areas of Maryland for more than a decade. And you talked about how telemedicine is being used to address some of it. Is that essentially where we are, or is there any plan or any success in actually getting more doctors and medical professionals practicing in rural areas?
I think that you might get different answers from different people on that. One of the things that, you know, when some of these communities do assessments or needs assessments, and looking at what their population could handle. If you're talking about the lower shore, for example, as you just mentioned, the small rural community might not be able to sustain of one full-time provider. Maybe a provider's only needed once a week, or maybe only a provider's only needed every other week or twice a month. So I think there's a lot of different ways to do this. Some communities are partnering with larger research institutions, sometimes outside of the state walls, and saying having a provider come in and only provide those services, have a clinic once a week. So I think there's some, besides telemedicine, I think there's some creative ways that small rural communities can work with their neighboring communities, whether it's within the state or beyond, to get the services at the level they need. You don't want to get a cardiac surgeon to a small community and then not be able to, you know, to be twiddling their thumbs. You want to be able to be sensitive to time and making sure that you're being a good steward of resources. So I think a lot of times, and I think what the rural communities are good at is being creative. If it's not sustainable to have a full-time provider come, what's a good solution? Maybe the provider, again, has a one-day clinic. Maybe they do one-day telemedicine. Maybe there's some unique schedule that can be developed.
When I was browsing the report, the rural health plan, and I confess I browsed more than, you know, dug in and read it in detail, but I just kept thinking, what would acting on so many of in so many of these areas of need that the plan points out, what would it cost? Are the financial resources there to do what needs to be done?
Well, that gets back to the sustainable grant funding. A lot of programs that are doing amazing work in the rural communities are grant funded. So I think that one of our tasks here at the Rural Health Association is to make sure that the state funding through, whether it's the Maryland Community Health Resources Commission, their grant program, or the Rural Maryland Council and their program, There's two, the Rural Maryland Prosperity Investment Fund and Meridaf, making sure that those programs are supported and funded so that they can continue to funnel money into the rural communities, whether it's small grant programs to fund transportation, community ride programs, whether it's seed money to get a small idea going. But there are large funding implications, and a lot of times those grant programs that are really, really necessary to help sustain and launch some of the really innovative programs that are happening across the state.
Thanks for talking to us about it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Laura Wilson is Executive Director of the Maryland Rural Health Association. We've been talking about barriers to healthcare access for rural Marylanders and how they're being addressed. We have links to more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org, as well as information about the Health Benefits Exchange. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.